As we, I don't know how that slide got up there. If you think the pastor should visit you in the hospital, even though you didn't tell the pastor you're in the hospital, you might be a Methodist. Sorry about that. Go ahead, next slide. I saw that. I'm so bad, I just couldn't resist. I could have resisted. I didn't want to resist popping that in there today. I'd like to invite you to Matthew 25 today, if you would. Again, it would be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to him. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man once who had received the 5 talents went out at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the one who received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole, stuck it in the ground, hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with the 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's reward," or his happiness. The man with 2 talents also came, and "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents, and I've gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness." And then the one who received the 1 talent came. "Master," I said, I knew you were a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and hid your talent in the ground. So here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money at least on deposit with the bankers so that when I return, I would have it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw the worthless servant outside into darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." I want to start off by saying there are applications here that have to do with our stewardship, or we wouldn't have picked that passage. But it's far greater than that. This story is really talking about, and at least in my opinion, the greater story is how we invest our lives based upon the opportunities that God has for us. It's not about necessarily just including, sowing and reaping money and so forth. It's about the investment we make our lives in this world. It's how we live our lives. It's whether or not we live for God and live for others as opposed to living for ourselves and being consumed with ourselves. That's what this is about. And I want to, because I am pretty ADHD sometimes and more so other times, I want to go back just for a moment and insert something that I said earlier as well, because it's that important. And I'll talk about it privately at any point. How many of you know the Marine Anthem? From the halls of Montezuma to what? When were the Marines birthed? 240 years ago. The shores of Tripoli is where our Marines fought radical Islam 240 years ago. So, guys, this is not new. And I mentioned earlier, a week or so ago, that you and I view time so differently in the West as opposed to the East. Do not be deceived. This radical stuff is a continuation of the Crusades. They've never ended. And please don't minimize that. And again, it's not my purpose today to spend a lot of time talking about that, and I've said all I planned on saying. Well, today the steward, the rest of the story, the faith of the servants, first of all, I want us to understand they were trusted according to their ability. God never called me to sing in our choir. I can guarantee that. And all the choir members said, amen. It's important that we recognize that God is not ever going to put you in a place to serve or to be faithful where, in fact, you can't be faithful and serve. That's just not going to happen. God puts us in places and gives us talents and gifts. And again, if we can think in these in terms of money if we want to, and it's okay, it's there. It's in, you know, because as a person, very frankly, as a person invests their funds, that's where their heart is anyway, right? We give, and then we connect. And it's important to understand that. But let me just say from the bottom of my heart, as frankly as I can be, most churches do not have a problem with money. They've got a spiritual issue related to those who will not give faithfully to God. That's period. And most ministers, myself included, hate saying that. But it's an issue of priorities. It's an issue of spiritual growth and development. It's not a stewardship issue. And I hope you hear that loud and clear from my point of view. I've never met a church, never really seen a church in our culture that has financial problems. We have spiritual problems. We truly do. And we go back and look at how folks in our culture and our world spend their money, and you tell me we've got a financial problem in any church? That's just not true. It's a great deception. And the same is true with talent and our lives. We have every talent needed to faithfully serve God on this corner in this church. We don't have anything missing. I believe that with all my heart. God assembles the right people at the right time in the right place to do His work. And we need to embrace that. And I will also say, additionally to this, is that no one has ever regretted being faithful to God and giving their life to God and serving God faithfully. There are no regrets with that. Now, I will tell you that sometimes the pay is not great, but the rewards are heavenly. They were entrusted completely, point B. You know, it's not as if God doesn't trust us. God trusts you completely. He's empowered you. He's given you, according to 2 Peter 1, all things that pertain to life and godliness through His Word by His Son. Everything we need is here. Everything. We are lacking nothing. And He entrusts us completely. He has work for you to do in whatever venue. And I'm not saying, you know, that you need to. One of the pressures, let me go ahead and say this. Many of you know, because you've been on Facebook, that Tyler Ballou has been having some struggles, right? He's been having a lot of struggles. How many of you already knew that? Sure you knew that. I've made 10 or 12 trips to Rocky Mountain to spend time with him. And one of the hurdles we had to overcome was he misunderstood in his own mind at some level. He thought we were saying he was going to Wesleyan College to be a minister. And I guess maybe somehow that was implied. That's what he heard. And I'm not saying today that God has called anybody to go into the ministry. The best advice I was given by my mentor spiritually 40 years ago was, if you can do anything else other than be a minister, go do it. And he was serious. You see, that's the compelling nature of the call. But let me offer this. God has called everyone in this room today to live for Him and to be the light of the world, so that when others see you, the darkness goes away. And that was profound. I need a witness on that one. Is that true or not? It is true. You can touch lives in a way far greater than I will ever, you see. Especially in the Methodist denomination, I'm perceived as a drive-by preacher. But you're here for good. And you can touch lives. And I made a statement in a sermon. I will not make that statement here because I don't want to deal with the consequences of that statement. But in one of my churches, I made the statement, there are people in the church that believe if I don't go to the hospital and visit them, they haven't been visited or prayed for. Now, they might have had 30 visits from church members. But I'm not going to make that statement here. I don't want to deal with, you know, what you might respond if I said that. So I'm not going to say it. And you can't make me say it. Elton was a dear friend of mine. He and I had the same birthday. And his daughter's name was Cheryl and his granddaughter's name Nicole. We became really, really good friends. And then one day he was 80 years old at the time. He was working part-time at one of those county recycling places. And one day a lady drove up that he did not know, had never met her, never seen her before. And he never met a stranger. He talked and talked and talked. He would talk to me as I was getting in my car driving away. He'd still talking. And he began talking to her about some things in his life, and she jumped out of her car and put her arm around him and said, "Well, let's have a prayer." And he said, "John, I get it now. I get it now." Additionally, the first two servants were looking for opportunity. Now think about that in terms of not just, again, finances. Think of that in terms of spending our time and volunteering. And we have great volunteers here. But it's like, understand, they're looking for a place to serve and finding that place. And that place is not the same for everybody. You would be amazed. I was had the privilege of going on a men's retreat on July 4th weekend in Colorado. And I took a youth from our church, maybe two of us from the church went. We spent a whole day in St. Louis in the airport getting free passes, getting bumped off of planes. And I lost my pass. I tell you how bright I am. They spent theirs and went back to St. Louis for a ball game, and I couldn't find my pass. But I was in this place. It was a men's retreat. And lo and behold, I get there, and I'm the only pastor in the whole group. And the next thing you know, I'm working. Because they're turning to me, and you know. And so what happened was, at the end of this retreat, this guy came up to me and said, "Pastor John, this whole retreat's been about using your passion, whatever you enjoy doing, and doing it for God. And I don't know of anything I enjoy doing other than tinkering with my motorcycle." And I said, "Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you go to your minister and say, I like tinkering with motorcycles. How can God use that?" And he emailed me. He was a tech engineer for Texas Instruments in Dallas. He emailed me about 6 months later, and he said, "You'll never believe what's going on in our church." I knew what was going on. I just knew. He said, "We have 35 motorcyclists that show up every Saturday morning to tinker on their motorcycles, and we have breakfast together, and we have a devotional together, and we serve God together." And I went, "Wow." You follow how that's organically how those things work? And then I had another guy in the church that said something to me that wouldn't resonate at all here, but he said, "You know, I've never told anyone this, including my wife. I had more joy in high school when I was involved in a play than any other thing I can remember." Right? Does that work for any of you? It does, doesn't it? It does. And I said, "Well, go to your pastor and say to him, I would like to serve God, and I'm into drama, and I love that stuff, and I really want an opportunity to use that for God's glory. Is there a way I can do that?" A year later, now you're going to think I've lost my mind. I have, but it's not related to this. I flipped through the channels and found myself on TBN, and there he was as a prisoner in Paul's jail. And it turned out that they grew this thing in California to the extent that they had 100 people in their drama team in this big church that he started. And the next thing you know, they're filming these things and using them on TV. It's incredible how God can use your individual passion organically. When we try to make things happen, guess what happens? We lose interest in it. But when we do it because it's play for us or fun for us, we can go on forever. We can live our lives with such passion and joy. How many of you have children that don't like to take naps? You ever find them under the dining room table? That's what it's like to serve God out of your passion. You serve, and one day you just fall over and you're tired, like a little kid that didn't want to take a nap. Because play and serving God out of our passion doesn't grow old. And let me say this again. I apologize. I've been doing this 35 years, and I have never lost my zip. You know why? It's fun for me. Most of what I do is play and fun. And that irritates some people to death. They can't believe you can serve God and enjoy it. You're supposed to be beat down and sad and, "Oh, I'm such a servant, you know." That's how some people perceive ministry. And I'd have quit 20 years ago if that had been the case. I'd have run out. You know, I don't know if you know the story. Such a great story. I had a neighbor. We were doing a remodeling at a parsonage, and I had a neighbor who loved cats. And one day we were had been painting, and the neighbor's cat came over and got in the gasoline that I was using to clean the brushes and drank a bunch. And as I opened the door to the garage, that cat went crazy. It was zipping up and down the walls. It was going absolutely berserk. And then it fell over in the middle of the garage like this. It didn't die. It just ran out of gas. I have never run out of gas. I started to say, I'm full of gas. Well, secondly, these two servants had childlike faith. The man who had received the five talents went at once. You think about that. What does that say? Went at once. Now, that's childlike faith, is it not? Now, how many of us, you know, I'm the guy that wants to overthink everything. Are you that same person? Overprocess it instead of, here's a good impulse, and you say, let's just go do it. Now, I've done that, and I've created some havoc in my life occasionally. But think about this person is so passionate about this opportunity to serve God, they just, bam, take off and go serve God. And you know what I think of, and I don't mean to call him out too much, when I think of Jeremiah and his wife Rachel. They just have that childlike faith, and they were ready to go to Costa Rica on a dime. Well, the third thing I want to point out is they were shrewd. They put their money to work and gained five more. They were shrewd. They were also shrewd in how they invested their lives. And this is where I think maybe Matthew is weaving in the whole topic of money. I think he's weaving it in and out of this, so it's sort of a double entendre kind of thing. And by the way, the number one topic in the entire Gospel of Luke is money. Number one topic. If you go through the Gospel of Luke and circle the word money or mammon in every place, it's mentioned there more than any other single word or topic in that gospel. They were shrewd. Fourth, they were risk takers. The man who had received the five talents went at once and put his money to work and gained five more. They were risk takers. Well, the last servant was certainly capable. He said he gave each one according to their ability. Capable. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier. God does not call us to do anything outside of our ability. However, He does call us to do things outside of our comfort. Is that true? God never said one place in the Word, in His Word, I'm calling you to be comfortable. In fact, He's calling us to be uncomfortable. I've said the double whammy for ministry for most pastors is I'm called to offer comfort to those who are uncomfortable, and I'm called to make uncomfortable those who get comfortable. That's a setup, right? How many of you are comfortable at school going to FCA? That's not always comfortable. Somebody might say something. You with me on that? Is it always comfortable being a Christian in school? No. And our seniors that are going off to, this year, you're going to find out what uncomfortable is. Because everything you believe is going to be challenged. And God is calling you to be faithful in that world. And there's nothing harder than to be faithful around new people. It's so easy to drift into another place. Well, He's called us to be risk takers, shrewd risk takers. He says we're capable. They were. Look at this, but the man who, the last servant was capable, but he was also scheming. He dug a hole in the ground. Now, it's interesting to me that I have this image of this guy who gets this talent, and again, to weave in the whole concept of money is okay, I think it's there, but he's taken his money, he's taken his talent, and he has a death grip on it. He is scared to death. I wonder if he lived in a world where Twin Towers went down. I wonder if he lived in a world where we've seen massive fluctuations in the stock market. or in investments. I wonder if he lived in a world where he had seen terrorism on the rise, and he had seen conflict in the world, and he'd seen Christians being marginalized in our culture. Is that what brought him to his fears? Greater is he that is in you than he that's in the world. Well, he also was presumptuous. To one he gave each according to his ability, then he went on his journey. He just took off half-cocked. He was also defensive and blaming. Point four. He was an underachiever. Point five. Wow. Well, the first two servants were rewarded. They had a sense of pride. They had a sense of being satisfied. They were people that were given more responsibility. How many of you have ever hired people to work for you? You've done that. You ever hired anybody that came in and thought they should be a vice president about the day they started? Yeah. I'll tell you what, I learned hard work by working in the summers in the textile mill in the shipping department. I mean, that was hard work. Satisfied. I don't mean to, again, but I can tell you, working hard brings about satisfaction. They were given more responsibility, and lastly, they were filled with joy. There's something about faithfulness that creates joy in our hearts. Well, the last servant was afraid. He was judged, and he was judgmental, and he lost reward. Well, there's some real lessons here for us today. There are many, many lessons here. If you would pray through this passage and think through this passage, there are so many more lessons than I'm going to offer. The first one is to owe nothing. What did Paul or Jesus teach us about owing debt? He said, we have a debt, right? He says, owe nothing but love. What a great word that is. That's a great debt to have to pay, is it not? Remember that we are working in this, and that we are in kingdom building. This is kingdom work. And that's what the stewards understood about the ones that had the five and invested it, and the one that had two and invested. They understood that this is kingdom work. You see, you're not just fill in the blank. You with me? You're not just that. You are that and more. Kingdom builders. My life and my resources belong to God. What a great lesson. Isn't it freeing to have one Lord as opposed to having many? I think it's very freeing. You know, my life, my time, my talent, my resources, all that belongs to God. And then lastly, I will be judged for my stewardship. Heavenly Father, thank you for this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story. Give us the grace we need to see ourselves in light of this story, both with our service, our gifts, our prayers, our presence. Help us to see this as a wonderful call to faithfulness. And I pray in Jesus' precious name. Amen.